Chapter 23, The Dairy.
A client called us in early 2009, just after I was starting to recover from my illness. He needed us to shoot a number of commercials back to back. Until now, we would have used one of the hangars on the airfield, but as I may have hinted earlier in this book, knowing what curveball the Science Museum would throw next was impossible to judge, and this one was definitely not on the cards. The hangars were out of bounds, unusable until they'd been repaired. How long was that going to be? Well, they didn't know. A flippant, probably a couple of years, was the actual response I was given. So suddenly we were hit with a dilemma. We needed to film in a large space, which, quite simply, we suddenly didn't have. A few days passed and I was talking with a good friend of mine about the problem, a good friend who was also my next-door neighbour, a good friend who actually owned a business park in Aberlidge, a business park that he'd converted from one of his farm's old dairies. He mentioned that they possibly had a building up for grabs on site which they hadn't converted beyond a barn, so we went and had a look. And to say it needed a lot of work was an understatement, but this was definitely an amazing opportunity. We could work just 100 yards from my home and so the long hours could be flexible. This was definitely the answer my health needed. The only problem was that the building we'd been shown was in fact a cow shed, which hadn't really had much done to it other than walls added on all sides. We had 2.5 months until the shoots, so we signed the contract incredibly quickly, put some designs together, and got building. The plan was simple: convert half the building into a film studio space and the other half into offices and edit suites. It was a simple plan which luckily I could see clearly in my mind. I may have skipped past this in the book, in fact, I'm sure I haven't mentioned it at all, but as well as loving film and music, I'm an avid builder. Why are these relevant? Well, because it was such short notice, I was going to have to build our new studios myself. This was a big challenge without any doubts. To that point, I think the biggest single building project I'd completed was converting my parents' garage into a two-room studio just before I moved to Swindon. A studio I never used, by the way, and it set me back about $8,000. Hey-ho. So a very large cow shed with a sloping floor was a whole new league, but perfectly achievable if the time frame was maybe a little restrictive. Everything happened smoothly, and although we didn't really have the money to do the development, nor did we have the time, nor did we have the energy, it happened. It actually went incredibly well, and most importantly, the commercials came together and they looked great. All in all, job done. The issue now was how to deal with the new building. From a long-term perspective, there were a multitude of advantages. In the short term, there were even more disadvantages. During construction, I'd committed pretty much every spare minute to undertaking the build or overseeing other contractors. Well, I had to, in order to get them delivered on time and within the smallest of possible budgets. I set myself a budget of £30,000 and we actually spent £26,000 roughly on the initial build. The only mistake, one that my business coach and my wife Rebecca knew that was a bad decision, was that I was so busy working on the building getting ready for the shoots that I didn't even have the time to tell anyone where we were relocating to, or to tell clients of any of the wonderful possibilities this building could bring to their work. Thus, once it opened and we did the first few jobs, there was very little work for the studio for the next 6 months, while we continued with edits and animations, which are the more time-consuming day-to-day jobs, and I also went out promoting it. Oops, school by error, such an obvious mistake too, which I saw coming, but I did nothing about because in reality, if I'd spent all my time trying to rustle up the business instead of being a builder and foreman, we would have had no studio for the clients to come to. In many people's eyes, a mistake, in mine, something we could rectify a lot more easily than having no studio to operate from. Now, although it sounds wonderful that we came in under my £30,000 budget, well, I hadn't really budgeted correctly. I knew we had enough money in the bank to do the build, but as we'd rushed into our new building project, I'd not fully factored in what bills would be due in certain times. Let's face it, we'd just had 3 years or so in a serviced office environment. Suddenly, on top of my forecasted overheads, I now had rental, rates, service charges, electricity bills, a lot of things that, while we're at the Science Museum, we didn't worry about. Oops. Again? This was made even worse by the unfortunate late payment of a number of invoices, as sadly the recession was in full swing by this time. The recession meant I could get cheap labour and materials for the construction, but the clients were not paying quickly. In fact, some were taking 5 or 6 months to pay. Even though we were still trying our hardest not to give credit, some of the really big companies we worked for simply would not work with those terms. Project management was slipping through the net because I was busy focusing on the construction and not on the business itself. These late payments were, again, 6 years on, still screwing with our finances and making forecasting for the business impossible. We really had to knuckle down to get things progressing more smoothly once more. In many ways, I was worried we were in a cycle, repeating the mistakes of the past. But luckily, being away from the Science Museum meant we could actually focus on our work. The new offices served every purpose for our business perfectly. All that was missing was that the office wasn't in London. We had, however, probably should have mentioned this two or three chapters ago, taken on a smaller office in London over the same period of time, which meant that we were close to the clients in London, but also had a massive offering of the studios, kit and post-production services. These were outside of London, which, as we've established, Londoners are quite petrified of, but nonetheless, in a financially difficult time, it was a one-stop solution for clients and they knew exactly what they could get from us. As I said in the previous chapter, finding a way of making the business indispensable is such a key aspect to the future-proofing of your offer. All industries, and especially those that rely on technology, need to constantly look to the future to retain competitiveness. For us, the secret was knowing our offering, knowing our speciality, and being able to cost and time control our offering better than anyone else. Having the facilities we had meant we could truly offer a complete service without having to outsource anything. Outsourcing can be great, by the way, but what if the supplier's booked up when you need them? What do you do then? I don't know, you find someone else and try and negotiate the same prices. Well, that might be easy while a recession's happening, but when that ends, people will not be so keen to do deals. And why should they? Sometimes a company or individual who doesn't budge on price is a winner. When the industry picks up again, they'll have retained their value still. If they turn down work and someone else does it, I don't know, for half the price, when the economy picks up, the client may stick with the cheaper option for showing loyalty, but amazingly, most won't. It's a similar situation to when we started Sandstorm, that clients feel happier and often more comfortable spending a lot more money but working with a bigger, more reputable company. You have to spend in order to accumulate. It's horses for courses, of course. Every business is different. Some will reward you for flexibility, helping them while they're down. However, keep this very sad fact in mind. Everyone in business is out for themselves. As a business, we've been able to succeed by doing two things in essence: remaining honest and keeping our integrity. But we know full well that when a client comes to us with a smaller than usual budget, that does not mean we'll get the next big budget. If anything, it means that the next one will be the same or smaller. And when they finally do get the big budget, they'll still go to the biggest, best, flashiest solution out there because it's cool and it's safe and they get to feel a bit like a celebrity for the day. I digress again. We get good rates from our suppliers by paying extremely quickly. Very few people do that and suppliers really value it. Then we always guarantee to work to deadlines. If a client wants something done by a certain date, we will only take it on if that date is realistic. If it's a short deadline, we generally charge more to get it done, running in a sort of shift pattern. In the way that I'd worked as a junior at my first agency, running the team for 48 hours is not the way to run a sustainable business, so we wouldn't ever entertain that regularly. You have to think differently and always make sure that you deliver what you promise for the price you agree. If a client changes the brief, well, then the price has to change. But their brief has to be in writing for you to agree to. Just sending someone a price and outlining what you'll do for that is not a brief. It's just inviting trouble. Sadly, in business, you have to dot your I's and cross your T's. And if you're not precise in your proposition and quotation, then you'll pay for it every time. Keep this in mind. Don't use a detailed quote to hold a client to ransom. Use a detailed quote to keep everyone focused on the project and aware of the expectations on both sides. You should evaluate every job on completion and, where possible, summarise the job with the client so that both of you learn from each project. Only through learning can you achieve the excellence that you're striving for, and with excellence comes reward. But regardless, look after yourself physically and mentally, and look after your money. Spend it wisely and remember, life's a marathon, not a sprint. I still have to remind myself of that on a regular basis as it doesn't come very naturally. You need to invest wisely in the knowledge that at any stage, your business may not be valued for what it does anymore. Or worst case scenario, everything outside of work changes and through your lifestyle changes, your outlook changes on life. Are you future-proofed enough to deal with it? I know I finally am getting there, but it will never be certain. Nothing's certain, especially in the current financial climate. It's taken a lot of mistakes to get to this point for me, and I hope it takes a little less stress for you. Getting our business completely secure and running 100% smoothly, although genuinely impossible, should always be strived for. Whatever you choose to do, remember, make a plan and stick to it. Integrity is vital to your success.